This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In this edition today, our bulletin of church news that will be followed by panorama and then our feature of Echo of the African Synod. Today we shall close with a segment dedicated to Millennium Appointment. My name is Kanyan Tagodfrey Kampamba. The address of the Holy Father to the diplomats accredited to the Holy See did not take place on Monday. The Vatican announced earlier on Sunday that because of the pain that the Holy Father continues to feel in one of his legs, the encounter with the diplomats would not be possible. Also cancelled because of the same reason was the Holy Father's participation on Monday at the gathering to conclude the week of prayer for Christian unity, where he was supposed to preside over the Vespers. Traditionally, the week of prayer for Christian unity is celebrated between 18th and 25th January, between the feasts of Saints Peter and Paul. Instead, Pope Francis delegated the president of the Pontifical Council for the Promotion of Christian Unity, Cardinal Kate Quirk, to represent him for the Vespers to close the week of prayer for Christian unity. Cardinal Koch, during the encounter, read the Pope's written homily for the occasion. The Vatican's Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, on Monday sent a video message to the Climate Action Summit, urging participants to use the technology we have for better and more integral progress. Hosted by the Netherlands, the online International Climate Adaptation Summit 2021 will be held between 25th and 26th January. Francesca Mello has more.
On behalf of Pope Francis, I am pleased to extend a cordial greeting.
Cardinal Parolin opens his video message by extending Pope Francis's cordial greeting and closeness, support and encouragement in these days of intense effort for a fruitful outcome to this climate adaptation summit. Cardinal Parolin explains that the scientific data we currently have clearly shows the need for swift action, taking into consideration the context of ethics, equity, and social justice.
This is a moral and humanitarian imperative.
This is a moral and humanitarian imperative, he stresses.
While the poor are the least responsible for global warming,
he continues saying the greatest negative consequences of climate change often affect the most vulnerable, and he notes that while the poor are the least responsible for global warming, they are the most likely to be affected since they have the least adaptive capacity and often live in geographical areas which are particularly at risk. We are required to come up with a global and shared long-term strategy based on precise commitments capable of defining and promoting a new model of development and built on the synergistic bond between the fight against climate change and the struggle against poverty, he says.
The COVID-19 pandemic shows it very well.
Cardinal Parolin then goes on to note that the COVID-19 pandemic has demonstrated that nothing can be accomplished by working alone. Concluding his video message, Cardinal Parolin notes that what is necessary is a stronger international cooperation committed to a low-carbon sustainable development, as well as an investment in strengthening technologies and resilience and transferring them under fair conditions, particularly to the most vulnerable countries. I'm Francesca Merlo.
The Papal Almoner Cardinal Konrad Krojewski on Monday morning celebrated a funeral mass for a homeless Italian man who died last week in one of the reception centers run by the church. Cardinal George Pell, the Secretary of the Congregation for Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments, Archbishop Arthur Roach, and a good number of priests concelebrated the Mass with the Papal Almoner. The Mass took place at the parish of St. Pius X in the Roman district of Bauduina. In his homily, Cardinal Krajewski paid his last respects to Roberto Mantovani, the 64-year-old homeless man who, despite his difficulties, was always ready to betray a smile for those he met on the street. During the Sunday Angelus, Pope Francis spoke of the death of Edwin, the homeless Nigerian man killed last week by the cold in the street. It is another Good Friday, the Pope said, recalling the words of St. Gregory the Great, who in an occasion of such a death said that day masses would not be celebrated, precisely because in the face of the death of a poor person, it was like a Good Friday. Today, the community of many brothers and sisters born in the street mourns Robertino, as they called him, said the papal almoner. Fortunately, the cardinal went on, he did not die of the cold, and fortunately, in recent times, he had listened to the advice of volunteers and, after many bouts of pneumonia, had moved to the shelter run by the community of St. Egidio. It was there that he passed away, in the warmth of the caregivers, and not from the disease of indifference that kills the most. At least 8 children have been abducted from an orphanage in Harati in the Federal Territory of the Nigerian capital Abuja on Saturday 23rd January at around 1 o'clock local time. A large group of heavily armed men attacked the Rachel's orphanage home and took away the children. At least 3 adults were also abducted. The Archbishop of Abuja, Ignatius Kaigama, has recently spoken about the infamous kidnappings in Nigeria that have often also affected the clergy. In his homily on January 18th at the St. Anton Parish of Yangoji in Abuja, whose parish priest, Father Matthew Dajo, was kidnapped and detained, Archbishop Kaigama said that if left unchecked by the Nigerian authorities, this shameful and disgusting act will continue to give Nigeria a bad name and scare away visitors and investors to the country. He also prayed for the release of those who are still in captivity and for the conversion of the perpetrators of this inhuman act. Father Matthew Dajo was detained by his captors for 10 days from November 22nd before his release on December 2nd, 2020. May Christ manifest himself to the perpetrators of such evil actions as kidnapping, rape, killings, and many other evil acts, and grant them a change of heart, said the Archbishop of Abuja. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The Central African Republic has handed over a former rebel commander to the International Criminal Court to face trial. Mohamed Saïd Abdelkhany is accused of war crimes and crimes against humanity dating back to 2013. He was a prominent figure in the Seleka faction, a mainly Muslim coalition, which briefly seized power that year before being ousted. Khany was flown to the ICC headquarters in The Hague on Sunday. The International Tribunal issued the arrest warrant under seal on the 7th of January 2019. No date has been set for his court appearance. In 2012, the predominantly Muslim Seleka rebels ousted Central African Republic President François Bozizé and seized power through a campaign of violence and terror. The following year, the Seleka took control of Bangui, attacking civilians and pillaging the city. In a statement Monday, the rights group Human Rights Watch said the surrender by the CAR authorities of the first Seleka rebel suspect to face charges is an important step towards justice for serious crimes committed by the two main warring factions in the country's civil conflict. A court in Uganda on Monday ordered security forces to leave the home of opposition politician Bobi Wine. Military and police have blocked the 38-year-old from leaving his home in the suburb of the capital Kampala since he voted in the 14th January election, where he ran against incumbent President Yoweri Museveni. The 76-year-old president, who has been in power since 1986, was declared winner of the poll with 59% of votes. Bobi Wine, whose real name is Robert Chagulanyi, came second with 35%. Wine rejected the results, alleging fraud, which the government denies. Police in Nigeria say they are hunting for a group of gunmen who attacked an orphanage in the capital Abuja on Saturday and kidnapped at least 6 children. A police spokesman told the BBC that one of the abducted children was rescued. The gunmen stormed the orphanage in Abaji area on the outskirts of the city and kidnapped the 6 children aged between 10 and 13 and 3 other residents. While attacks on orphanages are rare in Nigeria, schools have been targeted previously, More than 300 schoolboys were kidnapped from their school in northwest Nigeria last month. The boys were later rescued and reunited with their families a week after they were kidnapped. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
The African Synod, the Church Alive in Africa Today.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. In this edition, you can hear the second part of an interview with Father Dumisani Vilagati, the director of the Secretariat of Imbisa, that is, the Interregional Meeting of the Bishops of Southern Africa. Member countries are Angola, Sao Tome and Principe, Botswana, Eswatini, previously known as Swaziland, Lesotho, Mozambique, Namibia, South Africa and Zimbabwe. In our last edition, he spoke to our correspondent in South Africa, Sheila Purish, about the work of the regional grouping during the course of the past year amidst the COVID-19 pandemic. Sheila also asked Father Vilagati to comment on governance issues in the countries of the region and in Zimbabwe in particular, where Imbisa has its headquarters.
Obviously, Imbisa will be for good governance. You know, these things, poor leadership comes from bad governance. And, you know, we've just come from the Feast of the Epiphany. I am reminded of the figure of Herod, who felt so insecure in his power that he was ready to do anything so as to secure his own power. And you find that sometimes there is that people trying to secure their own power, and they will go to any lengths just to prolong their stay in power. So that is probably a real issue for us here in Southern Africa. You have mentioned Zimbabwe, but these things are not certainly limited to Zimbabwe. For example, now with the locking up of borders, you know, people are just, you know, people unawares, people are just told that the country is locking up. Mm-hmm. And people are locked in or locked out, depending on where a person finds himself. And that's why we then see these long queues at the borders, like in Beit Bridge and also Lebombo Komati Port, Resano Garcia, I think that's what it's called on the Mozambican side. And also Maseru Bridge in Lesotho, the long queues. Of course, what compounds these things are the issues of the certificates that are required for COVID-19. And the governments in self-defense say they have to test all these people. Granted. But this speaks already to a reality that was existing even prior to COVID-19. The poor situation at the borders, you know, the whole issue of not handling migration very well. And so this locking up of borders actually closes up people away from their livelihoods. So when people cannot access work, cannot access their loved ones, people sometimes will go to drastic measures so as to attain that. I would be concerned, Imbisa would be concerned, of course, with that kind of impossible regulations which force people to use illegal means of accessing the next country. And I'm sure you have heard of a mother dying and drowning with her kids on the Limpopo River. Those are the situations that are quite dramatic and terrible, and that require of leadership to act in a better way. As Imbisa, we would want to see more integration. I mean, Imbisa already as an organization is looking at regional issues, more integration and people working together. And so we would call for the governments of our region to provide more personnel in that area and to also assist people acquire the right documentation. Probably also maybe civil society needs to work harder in educating people on what is required at the borders, because that could be a problem. But we are also aware that even people with documentation, because of the backlog, the queues, a person may have his COVID-19 certificate and which lapses after 72 hours. But that is caused, obviously, by poor preparations at the borders. and also that people are simply at times just caught unawares on a country being locked up. The other day, I came from Swaziland, and I saw people being turned back at the border because the borders were just closing quickly. But they, at Swatini, there was also another issue because there was the normal, it's called an Ingwala ceremony, which is done, and traditional ceremony which brings people together. The poor leadership, therefore, in that sense, in that case, is shown by that the traditional authorities allowed that ceremony to go ahead until, in fact, last week, Monday. And as soon as the ceremony was over, their own ceremony was over, they closed up the country, just to indicate how self-serving some leadership structures can be. And so we need to work hard as a church, as Imbisa, to promote good governance and good leadership in the region, which is unfortunately lacking.
And still on that issue of good governance, when we look at a country like Zimbabwe, for example, we have seen in the news reports over the past year and the year before that, how the government has clamped down on freedom of speech. We have a number of journalists that were arrested for speaking about the reality in the country. We have seen activists that have been arrested as well. We have seen the opposition also complaining about this in Zimbabwe. And not forgetting, of course, the Catholic bishops of Zimbabwe also tried to voice out their concerns, and they were attacked by the government. With all of this happening in Zimbabwe and in Imbisa being based there, how free are you to actually be the voice of the voiceless, to stand up for the people?
Well, probably what helps for Imbisa is that when the bishops pronounce themselves, they are pronouncing themselves on a reality that is much larger than Zimbabwe, as representatives of the nine countries. And when the bishops of Zimbabwe issued the statement, the march is not ended. The bishops of Imbisa issued their own statement stating that they supported fully what the Zimbabwean Bishops' Conference had indicated, which was basically a call for a better leadership around provision of personal of protective equipment in this time of COVID, calling for better distribution of resources. And I'm aware that in November last year, the Zimbabwe Catholic Bishops' Conference, the Department of Justice and Peace, they issued a statement on the Zimbabwean economy that they want, an economy which will serve the people of Zimbabwe. So Imbisa, in a sense, is free, is free to pronounce itself on matters, whether they touch Zimbabwe or they touch South Africa or they touch Swatini. I think this is important, that the church should have this type of freedom, notwithstanding the consequences, because when the bishops of Zimbabwe issued their statement, obviously the bishops were attacked by the government, especially the Archbishop of Harare, who was attacked as a tribalist. Even though the government never went into the details and contents of the letter, they just became personal. It became an ad hominem argument, attack. But also we know that the Holy See, the nuncio to Zimbabwe, Paolo Rudeli, did go to visit the Archbishop just to express his own support for him. So in a sense, the church is free, even at the level of Imbisa, to pronounce itself. The consequences, we don't know what can happen on that. We'll have to wait and see. But we also have to applaud the many courageous men and women in Zimbabwe who are ready to always speak truth to power. And I think a few days ago, Hopewell was rearrested again for having posted something on Twitter. So freedom of expression is certainly curtailed, but that should not discourage us. That should not make us stand back. On the contrary, it should be the fuel for going ahead and speaking truth to power and promoting human rights, because that is, it's about the dignity of the human person. So where the dignity of the human person is undermined, whether it's at Beitbridge border, or whether it's at Lebombo border, or it's at Maseru Bridge, or within the country itself, whether in Johannesburg or wherever, that is the interest of the church, and the church should approach it with all determination and confidence.
That was Father Domisani Vilagati, the director of the Secretariat of Mbisa, the interregional meeting of the bishops of Southern Africa. He was speaking to Sheila Pirish, and that's all for this edition of the African Synod, The Church Alive in Africa Today. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
You are welcome to Millennium Appointment. In this edition, we focus on COVID-19 and children. Medical studies carried out between December 2019 and now show that children of all ages are vulnerable to and can transmit SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19. Young children appear to be less likely to get infected, and when infected, many don't suffer life-threatening symptoms and very few die. However, cases of critical illness have been reported. Dr. Maria van Kerkhove is an infectious disease epidemiologist and technical lead of the COVID-19 response at the World Health Organization. In this edition, she addresses herself to parents. First, she explains the symptoms or signs of COVID-19 in children.
There are different types of disease presentation based on the age of the person who is infected by the SARS-CoV-2 virus, the virus that causes COVID-19. Luckily, children and adolescents tend to have more mild disease compared to adults. Most people who are infected with the SARS-CoV-2 virus have respiratory symptoms. They start to feel a little bit unwell. They will have a fever. They may have a cough or a sore throat or sneeze. In some individuals, they may have gastrointestinal symptoms. Others may lose the sense of smell or the sense of taste. Especially in the youngest children, they tend to be more mild, which means they don't have as many symptoms as adults do. Some children may have gastrointestinal symptoms like diarrhea or vomiting, but they tend to be more mild. And even most children tend to have asymptomatic infection, which means they don't have any symptoms at all.
Virologists in Britain, South Africa, Denmark, Ireland, and Australia have identified some variants of the virus which causes COVID-19. A variant is a new version of the same virus after it has undergone some genetic changes, a process scientifically known as a mutation. It is natural for viruses to undergo natural changes. However, sometimes these new versions of the virus could be more or less dangerous to our health. Dr. Maria van Kerkhove explains how the recently identified variants of the virus which causes COVID-19 affect children.
Virus variants mean changes in the virus, and we are detecting changes in the SARS-CoV-2 virus over time. This is expected. Many of these changes do not have any impact on the virus in terms of its ability to transmit or the disease that it causes, but some variants we call variants of concern. And these viruses need more study. And scientists are looking at the way the virus transmits, the disease that it causes, and luckily so far, these variants do not tend to cause more severe disease across any age group. The disease presentation looks the same, and the severity looks the same as the other SARS-CoV-2 viruses circulating. In terms of transmission, the virus variant that was identified in the United Kingdom, they noticed an increase in transmissibility across all age groups. This includes increased transmission among younger children as well. In the area where this virus variant was circulating, schools happened to have been open. And the virus that was circulating also circulated among the students and the faculties in those schools that were open. So there's much study that's still underway with these virus variants, but the studies in the United Kingdom, for example, do not indicate that the virus specifically targets young children, meaning that it's not infecting children more than would be likely of other viruses that are circulating in the area.
Protecting children from COVID-19 is not easy. Dr. Maria van Kerkhove offers the following advice to parents on how to keep children safe from the disease.
The best way to keep children safe is about prevention. We want to prevent as many infections as we possibly can all over the world. The comprehensive package of interventions that you hear us talk about all the time apply to children as well, making sure children have clean hands and they wash their hands appropriately with soap and water and sing the song so that they get enough bubbles and they make sure that those hands are really clean, or use an alcohol-based rub. Make sure that they practice respiratory etiquette where they sneeze into their elbow. Even my littlest one, who's 2 years old now, will cough and sneeze into his elbow. But these are good habits to be forming for children as they get older. Making sure that if they're age appropriate and they follow the local guidance, to wear a mask appropriately. With clean hands, make sure that the mask is put on over your ears, covers their nose and their mouth, and that the children don't touch the outside of their masks. Make sure that they have clean hands, and then when they take it off, to clean their hands as well. Making sure that you, as parents, talk to your kids as best you can, answering their questions. There's a lot of confusing information out there, and it's scary. So find the time to talk to them and answer their questions and alleviate their fear, and make sure that they get good information from you. And probably the most important thing that everybody can do is physical distancing. Outside of your immediate family, make sure that you keep your distance from others. That's the best way to prevent the spread of SARS-CoV-2.
Dr. Maria van Kerkhove, an infectious disease epidemiologist and technical lead of the COVID-19 response at the World Health Organization. I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime.
That is all we have time for in this bulletin today. Until next week at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.